What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Gamecast. I am one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everybody.
And today we have a special guest joining us for episode 95. I had to double check that. I'm sorry. I'm just bad with the numbers. And I was good. I was good for like a whole week and some change. And then I wasn't good. Just a week. You know, I'm forgetful. But yes, we have a special guest this week. Brittany Morris is with us.
Hello.
There we go. All right. I thought we lost you for a second.
Uh-oh.
It wouldn't be a podcast without issues, right?
That's true.
So, Brittany, I've come to follow you on Twitter. It was actually interesting. It was after you had made mention of, you know, joining Insomniac. And I was like, oh, who is this person? And I was looking up your information. I was like, oh, we got a black person working at Insomniac. Dope. Not that there's no black people there. I'm just saying, if I know, then I'm like, that's dope, right? But then I was like, oh, you also like write books and a bunch of other stuff. And you're an earthbender. So I was like, all right, I got a follower. Like, for real.
And you got to follow all earthbenders, of course.
Right? We just got to. But can you, like, you know, let us know a little bit about yourself and, like, how'd you even come to, you know, start working at Insomniac?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming.
So I started my career as a writer in 2019 after writing 200 query letters. None of them got a yes. And I finally got a yes. And my debut novel, Slay, came out and launched my career into the world of writing. And because it was about a video game, it naturally opened a bunch of doors in the video game industry. So nice. From there, I worked on video game projects like The Lost Legends of Redwall, Subnautica Below Zero, and now I'm working on Spider-Man 2, working at Insomniac Games full-time. I've also written The Cost of Knowing, which is my novel that came out in 2021. I wrote a YA novel for Marvel called Spider-Man Miles Morales Wings of Fury, and my novel The Jump is coming out this March.
Awesome. And that was, like, fast. Now, granted, I know to you that won't be fast, but to me, I'm like, that was quick. Like, you went like, I'm going to be here, then I'm going to be here, and then I'm like, an Insomniac, that's crazy. Got books and everything. And apparently NAACP award, right? Like,
yeah, nominee.
There you go. That's awesome.
Life-changing experience.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. Thank you. So with that, what has it been like? I mean, did you ever see yourself like writing for video games? Or was this something like, this is an opportunity, let me take it type of thing?
I don't know if I ever saw myself writing video games. Like, I was sure it would happen because it's one of those pipe dreams that's like a ton of people want to do it. And so I had it in my mind that like, I had to be like the best writer out there in order to be like plucked from the pool of professional writers to be able to write video games. And it really came down to like my passion for it. Like I've loved video games since I was a kid. And I got really, really lucky making the right connections on Twitter and in real life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I befriended someone at Insomniac and they told me how great it was to work there. And I remember like being a fan of the first Spider-Man game and just looking at, you know, everything as I was playing the game, like, oh my goodness, if I could be on a project like this one day, like I'm thinking like 10 years down the road. And now I'm lucky enough to be here just a few years later. So anything can happen, I guess.
No, that is awesome. I am a big fan. And you know, just looking at what you've done in terms of Subnautica and, or at least, cause I can't like pinpoint exactly what one person wrote over the other per se, but I know I enjoyed what was
That's good.
Exactly. Right. but I know I enjoyed what was there. And so, yeah, it was really cool. Like, and that's kind of, you know, with previous special guests, just writers and other people that I follow who do like really cool things. And I'm like, man, we got to definitely talk to these people at the very least to see like how their mind works. Because I'm imagining having to write, especially for Spider-Man. Because Spider-Man on the PlayStation 4 was huge. And then, all, you know, obviously Miles Morales came, and that was just amazing. And so when Spider-Man 2 was announced, and then I saw that, you know, your tweet, you're like, oh, I'm going to be at Insomniac. I was like, yes, this is great. this is great. Definitely looking forward to that, to playing Spider-Man and whatnot. But yeah, beyond that, we wanted to talk a little bit about our week and the things that we've done like normal. And I had a pretty good week, or rather, I had a week of content. I'll put it that way. The week was a little rough, but I was able to do a bunch of different things. Like, for instance, go see Black Panther, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I also caught up on Bleach, which is, I think, amazing is the word I would use. And this is not to necessarily knock on the previous season that, you know, ended the series years ago. I understand why that season had to be what it was, but it was not the one you would want to end the you know. And granted, that wasn't their choice, right? But this season, what's happening, like, it's real right away. Like, people are dying left and right. There's catastrophe. And one character, and it's like, but in terms of, not to be, you know, sound morbid, but like in the terms of like action and, you know, the finality of everything, like, okay, this is the real season finale. Think of it like, you know, if you're watching Game of Thrones and that last season didn't feel like the last season because it was kind of whack. It's like, no, this is the final season. This one right here. There's a lot of cool things happening. The animation is amazing. And I'm looking forward to see where it goes. I kind of cheated a little bit. I guess you can, if you call that cheating. I read some of the manga. I did. I know.
Not that is not cheating.
I feel like it is because I told myself I wasn't going to read it because I wanted to be surprised when you know, wherever things happen. But a certain character, their fate, I was like, I need to read this now. I'm not gonna be able to wait till next week or whatever the case may be. And so I cheated a little bit. But beyond that, it's been great. It's been it's really cool. And the line work is really like in terms of, if you look at the old episodes of Bleach and then like these new ones that are on Hulu, it's like leaps and bounds. Like, I don't know if they got a new animation team or whatever the case may be, but it's done really well. And we finally get to see certain characters. Was it Bankai? And I'm floored by some of the things that they're showing. I need you to watch this, Tess. I really do, because we have to talk about it later.
Okay, on Crunchyroll?
It's on Hulu. It's actually on Hulu. Okay. And yeah, I was like, Tess will be really excited when she sees all the stuff that's going down.
I mean, you know, I got to see my man Aizen if he's still in jail and stuff. But you know, that's my
he's
man.
He's there. He's definitely there.
Oh, that is my boy. I'm like, oh, glasses. He is still
trifling as hell. He definitely is.
Why you gotta be like this? Doesn't mean I love you less.
It's terrible, Tess. We have to talk about this.
I might have to get into this. I love me a trifling character.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. See, this is the thing. We have this. Kenny and I talk a lot about some rando ass, just trifling people on these shows, because that's where the real drama is, and that's where the interesting things are. I'm like, whoa, so you went and did all of these things. You did all of this. Oh, you like, why do I like these characters? I love these characters that just cause like stupidity, but they're like hot at the same time. and that's their redeeming quality. If you want to be a dick, you at least got to look good doing it.
Yeah, you can't have two struggles, right? You got to have one.
Thanks, pick one.
And he's mad intelligent and just ruthless and a really good character. And he's still around. He is definitely still around. So yeah, I think you'll be pleased. I think the new villain is, he's kind of like Aizen in terms of his scheming. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really smart and he's really like pulled the wool over. I don't want to say pull the wool over everyone, but his misdirection is really good to the point even like the higher ups are baffled at some of the things that he's doing. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't been watching, but definitely go check. If you're a fan of Bleach, or even if you're just curious, well, I wouldn't start it this season, obviously, but I would check it out, because what's happening right now is really good. And beyond that, what else did I do this week? Oh, I've been trying to catch up because the Game Awards are coming up. So I've been trying to catch up on my backlog of games.
Oh, and yeah.
God of War completely derailed all that. So did Call of Duty. And so I think it was last year I bought The Last of Us 2. It was Black Friday. And I was like, I'm going to get this, Ghost of Tsushima, and I'm going to get all these games played. And it's still in the wrapper. It's still in the wrapper. I just haven't had, either I'm covering a video game, I'm, you know, I'm writing about something, or, you know, the film reviews and stuff that I do or whatever. I'm doing something that pulls me away. And then because this is the gaming industry, a new game comes out. And I'm like, ooh, it's shiny. I want that. And that, yeah. So I hope to finish The Last of Us 2, you know, in the next 5 years. But right now, God of War has my attention. So I've been playing God of War Ragnarok. And so that's kind of been my week. I've been trying not to work as much, just trying to like let me have like a mental break, but that never goes too far with the stuff that we do. So yeah, that's about it.
Relatable.
What about you, Brittany?
Similar boat. I started watching a playthrough of God of War Ragnarok. Funny story, my like toxic gaming trait is that I am scared to death of combat. So like I am too much of an anxious mess to actually play like high octane games where like stuff is trying to kill me. So I'll just watch the playthrough of those kinds of games.
Agreed.
So I'm watching Jacksepticeye play through it right now.
Oh, nice.
And that's been a lot of fun.
I agree with you on
that. And there's so many hidden details, just like sweet little things from like the first game or from like I don't want to give too much away, but other pieces of media.
Right. Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It's definitely been an emotional ride. Even the early moments have been really strong. Do you ever think of like, if you're watching, you know, you're watching someone play, so it's for you, it's kind of like playing like a movie almost with, you know, because you're not actually interacting yourself. Do you ever think like, man, that would be interesting. Like, why didn't I think of that in terms of like writing? Like I do that a little bit with my art, where I'm like, oh man, I didn't think to do that, or you know, that's a really cool idea, or whatever the case may be. Do you ever see that when you're watching people play these games or playing them yourself?
Yeah, I mean, like now that I work in the industry, I feel like I can't watch a playthrough without like taking notes mentally. But like that first boss fight in Ragnarok, I was studying every line, like, oh my god, every single one of these is like heavy hitting, and like I'm already falling apart and we're not even like 10 minutes in. Like, how are they doing this? So yeah, for sure. They really threw down the gauntlet with this game. Like, I'm very excited to see the rest of it.
Yeah. Awesome. What about you, Tess?
So I've been doing a couple things. Funny that you mentioned watching the playthroughs, because I made a new anime friend this weekend. Actually, I made two anime friends.
Nice.
A married couple, which is great. My friend introduced me to them. And we were actually talking about watching playthroughs because we can't play. Like, I can't play because obviously my illness and I don't have my TV anymore. So it's not like I can play anyway. My Xbox is in a box, so I can't do anything. But just kind of laughing about how the three of us, me, my friend and her friend, we're just talking about how watching playthroughs is basically the best way for us to enjoy games. It's like, we're all migraine sufferers and we can't play anymore.
Ooh.
Kind of weak. So like, that's just the best way to get our nerd on, is kind of just to watch other people do it. And I'm like, yeah. And then I don't have to get anxiety, you know, about getting killed and attacked. I don't like scary games. So anyway, this is just the best way. So I agree with you. So there's that. And then these are the other things that I've been doing this week, and these are very important things.
Word.
And very important. I watched Love is Blind, and I feel like a new me has been born, because I really just hate people.
I saw you tweeting about it too.
It's all I was doing. I just literally just kept tweeting, something that I don't typically do. And I was just tweeting all of my anger and all of my hatred towards these people who did this stupid dating show. All of them are ridiculous. I can't even believe what I watched. And not to ruin it for anybody who hasn't watched it, because like, clearly it's one of the most popular things right now for people to discuss and talk about, because these people are insane. I just think that some people should not be allowed to be in the dating pool. And for you guys who are married and are out of the dating pool, I congratulate you for getting out early. But the dating pool, as we say, it has pee in it. It has a lot of other things in it too. It's not safe. And these fools on this show were out here doing the craziest things. It's like, if the premise of the show is for you to blind date people, and not blind date like in a regular sense where you meet somebody for the first time, you're like, oh, okay, hi, my name is so-and-so. No, you don't get to see them until you, after you propose to them, which is crazy.
Yeah, no.
You've got 10 days to fall in love with somebody. You get to date them behind a wall. You don't ever get to see them. And then basically, if you fall in love, you get to propose to that person. If you don't fall in love with anybody, you don't propose to them. And then you go home. The experiment is over for you.
I mean, you're talking to someone who's demi and ace. Like, I would probably nail that show.
Yeah, you should do it. You should.
I mean, only problem is I'm married, so.
Okay, yeah, that might be a problem.
They might feel away. They might feel away.
Yeah. So I watched the show and I'm like, yeah, this is, I hate these people because like some of them, they use this, like if their first choice doesn't work out, they just go with their second choice so that they can end up meeting their first choice when everybody goes on their honeymoons. And they go on honeymoons before they get married, goodness. By the way. Yeah.
Is this the show where the guy was, they were taping and he like was putting eye drops?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Show. That was that was cringe and hilarious at the same time.
What was he doing with the eye drops?
Okay. So they were recording. I gotta paint a picture for you.
Yeah.
Let me paint the picture.
Oh man.
Okay. So you know how when you watch like not talk shows, but you watch like these reality shows, they always have their little interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah, their confessionals. So he's in his confessional. He's sitting there in his confessional and he literally says to the producer and the cameraman, he goes, "Are we rolling?" And the guy goes, "Yeah, we're rolling. Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, okay." And then like his facial expression goes from like kind of happy to like sad. And then he's like, "Ugh, I just, you know, it didn't feel good." And I'm sitting there, wait a minute, what? He just went from like, "Are we rolling? Oh, okay, let me put on my game face," to, "Yeah, it really didn't feel good." And then they're like, okay, go on, explain how you
oh
feel.
My
and,
God. Like,
and then he starts talking about how she made him feel or something. And then he goes, "Wait a minute, this is a good moment for this." Reaches in his pocket, pulls out like the craziest eye drops. These are the eye drops that like burn your eyes, okay, when you put them in. Drops them in his eyes, right? Literally drop. He goes, he's like, "Okay, this is, try not to overdo it, okay." And then he's like, and then he squeezes his eyes, sniffles, and he's like, "Yeah," something like that. I don't know. He says something. He says some more words about how bad he feels. And then he pulls out the eye drops again. He goes, "Is it okay that I'm doing this?" to the camera guys. And the producer's like, "Yeah."
What a manipulative man. I hate this person.
Yes, you already hate him. And literally says to the producer, like, "Is it okay if I'm doing this?" And then they said to him, "If your eyes hurt, then yeah, it's fine." He pours these things all over his eyes. Dude has like a waterfall on his whole face. Turns to the side. The camera literally gets all of the tears glistening all over him. And then he's like, "I never thought I would love somebody so much that would bring me to tears." Are you kidding me?
And like, what was ill is that he thought that, he thought that they would cut it out. Like he thought that they would chop it up or whatever. And they just released the whole thing. Like they did
whole thing. Whole thing. I'm like, are you that dumb? Yes.
I don't think. Was. Yeah, that was. That's...
The whole time you were saying that, I was just imagining like Michael Scott, if like there was an episode of The Office where like they were filming a TV show on the episode of The Office,
yes,
and Michael Scott had to like play up a character. He would totally bring in like the crazy eye drops, yes, and do all of like, this doesn't even, yes, sound, how is this a real person?
And it is a real person. It is a, I don't, we, none of us understand how he exists. And like, I think that he was born in a soap opera. Like, he was born. He was literally born while his mom was watching soap operas, and she watched soap operas his whole pregnancy.
Yeah, that's like, I thought it was because I didn't know what the show, because I don't watch the show, and I saw people tweeting it, and I was like, "Oh, this is a bit. Like this is like you said, like The Office. This is hilarious." And then they were like, "No, this is real," and I was like, "Oh,
right." Like. Like, yeah, this dude was straight up on a dating show trying to get married to somebody. Can you imagine being married to this dude? and like never understanding what was reality and what was like not. Like,
That's why
no.
we can't have these. Well, I
I
mean,
don't have time for mind games.
No one. No
yeah,
one
I could not
does.
do that. Could not at all. And that's, but see, we it's great for like entertainment, and I think they should be, I think they should all be fake. Like this is like a mocking, you know how they do the like The Office where it's a dating show but it's not real, 'cause then you can get upset and know that it's not real. You have that comfort. But like knowing that this is real is like, oh, I just feel a way. Like I can't do it.
I
I
feel
can't.
away because I'm sitting here like, I mean, the last time I got this upset was when I was watching that one season of Married at First Sight, which was like, yo, I got to go to therapy because this is not okay. And it was in DC. And I'm sitting here like, no, these people are literally like 2 miles from me. Absolutely not. I can't. I'm not doing this. Not with, no, this is too scary. And so no, I was not okay with that. But like, this was just like, come on, guys, come on. You guys can't, this can't be real. People cannot be out here actually acting like this. And then on top of that, how y'all trying to be 25 years old and go on a marriage show? This is not a dating show. It is a marriage show. You go on the show to get
At
married
25?
at 25. And I'm
Well,
like, what?
that's a lot.
I'm not gonna hold you. I got married at 25, but I'm just
That's
saying.
different. That was in real life. It was tried and tested. These people don't know nothing. They didn't go to college together for 5 years.
Facts, facts.
Yeah. Like, my husband and I met when we were kids, and 21 was still young to be getting married. Like, we met when we were 10, and 21 was, because you do so much growing between 20 and 30,
Yeah, you
like
do.
so much.
You do. And these people like still got their training wheels on. So I don't know who allowed them to do this. This is why I hate these producers on these shows. And I also found out today that just like in some of these other shows, instead of having people actually apply for the show and end up getting on or whatever, they are going on Instagram and they're finding popular people that they think will do well for the show, and that's how they get them. Instead of actually having people who want to apply for the show, they are just finding people that they think are interesting and throwing them in. And I'm just like, you're kind of defeating the purpose of people who actually want to get married. Because on a show, I mean, like, I'm not going to say for a show like this, because clearly after the first season, seasons two and season three, they just got a whole bunch of people who just want to be famous. But as for, it's true. They just want to be famous. Because after you get on a reality TV show like this, if your name is trending, you're going to get all kinds of money thrown at you for different stupid things, paid appearances,
Oh,
right off
yeah. Big Ed?
the bat. Yeah. And
Nobody knew who
oh,
he was.
God. Oh, ooh.
Can't forget his face, can you?
Oh man, I did. I oh,
That's terrible. But that's
you're welcome.
that is the point though, right? 'Cause like even with, I mean, granted, the real world and, you know, Road Rules and everything, they had a theme that was, you know, it was supposed to be fun, but for the most part, a lot of stars came out of that. And so all these other shows, like no slight to Flavor Flav, but I'm pretty sure he didn't
Oh
have
man.
people like flocking to him for that particular, you know what I'm saying? It was more
Yeah.
so money, potential opportunity for A, B, and C. Nobody was trying to necessarily get married that way to Flavor Flav. At least I
Right.
hope not.
Not the flave.
Like, and like I said, no disrespect to him, but just anybody, like, you don't necessarily go on a show. Like, marriage is a, I don't want to preach, but like, marriage is serious for the most part. You don't think about, like, oh, I'm just gonna, and like, to have it to be a competition, I'm not competing, like, fam. Anyways, let me not. Let's jump into our topics for this week. We have a couple of things to talk about, some cool stuff. On a lighthearted note, we wanted to talk about Studio Ghibli, who recently had everyone, you know, going wild on Twitter because they posted a snippet or like a clip showing LucasArts, and everyone was like, oh, Studio Ghibli's gonna do something with Star Wars, which was, you know, a big deal considering it's a famous studio, animation studio. And considering also the fandom that Star Wars has, the idea that we'll get something interesting and new from this legendary studio, it's like, oh, this could be great. Like, you know, pairing these people up, or not people, but these companies up to create something iconic. And we found out that they were making a short, which I'm not mad at. totally not mad at it. I'm pretty sure there's people out there who are like, oh, it's not going to be a film or whatever the case may be, or a TV show. I am happy that it was a nice short. They filmed a short about Baby Yoda or Guru. I can't pronounce his name. Guru? I think it's Guru. And they released it on Disney Plus, I want to say on the 11th. And it's nice. It's called Zen, Guru and the Dust Bunnies. And for those who don't know, the Dust Bunnies are the, I guess, suit sprites from other Ghibli films. So think of My Neighbor Totoro or Spirited Away. Those little black, like, I guess they're dust with eyeballs. Like,
yeah.
If you've seen those movies, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
They're spirits.
Yeah, they're spirits. And we have Guru, and he interacts with them in a really cute way. I think it's like 3 minutes long. It's on Disney Plus. And I think it's awesome for a number of reasons. One, I like anyone who can tell a story without using words. A big animation fan and just illustration fan, I love the fact that there's no words at all. Just like with Pixar when they do their shorts. No words, just all images. Really cool. But then there's also this hand-drawn, like, beauty that goes with it. It's very soft and light and lighthearted. And I don't want to use the word wholesome because there's nothing. They're not trying to be that. They're just trying to be cute, I guess. And it works really well. The animation obviously is awesome. And the message at the end, or like what they're trying to do at the end, was really cute. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all three minutes of it. And I think you should check it out. I think the people who could potentially be upset because it's not a big Star Wars thing, it's okay. It's all right. It's all right. We don't have to have... We have too many Star Wars shows as is. We have too many films. I haven't even finished out... Was it the big one that's out right now? I did watch The Mandalorian. But there's a bunch that I just haven't gotten to because there's a lot. And there's a new show coming, I want to say, after this one. And so we don't need another show per se. But just to have Studio Ghibli do anything in this realm, I think is really, really cool.
I think people would probably argue that we could have rather had a show with Studio Ghibli and Lucasfilms versus whatever other Star Wars thing is coming out.
Right. Like if they did their own universe even, that would have been great too. It didn't even have to be Star Wars. Yeah. You know? But I'm just happy for anything currently. Oh, and also, because this is a thing, and I want to kind of talk about, because I know I'm probably the biggest Star Wars fan on the podcast currently. I wanted to also talk about, beyond this short, just Studio Ghibli in and of itself, because I was watching people's comments when they posted that tweet, and a lot of people were excited, but there were some people who were like, they just don't get the studio. I had one of my friends said Spirited Away was mad boring, or boring AF.
Did you defriend them immediately?
I didn't, because I understood.
What?
I totally understood, because I as much as
I'm leaving.
I just said I'm leaving too. Girl, where are you going? What bar are you going to?
Wait, no, because honestly, I get it. Like after watching, like for instance, My Neighbor Totoro last year, there are things that they do that Studio Ghibli does that's their artwork, the animation. And a lot of the stories that they tell, but they also, and this could be because of, language barrier or whatever the case, cultural differences. There are some elements that are just missed on the U.S., like the Western audience. And I think that if you aren't looking for that, or if you aren't ready for that, you might be bored in some of these films. Not all of them. Like,
Howl's, was boring, though.
Yeah, it was. Howl's Moving Castle is great. Like, so just amazing. Hands down. Great, but I can understand.
Half the people don't know what's going on in that movie, though. They don't even know, like, the World War II references and all kinds of things. The people are just like, "What's going on here? Why is he a bird?"
Right. It could be a lot, but like you were saying, like My Neighbor, it's one of those things where like it's building to something, and there's the acting is great, the voice acting or whatever, and the animation is great. But then where it ends, it just stops, and you're like, "Oh, that's it," and then. That was it. That's all you do. And you're like, oh, okay. Well, that was an experience. And you kind of move on. You remember the highlights and the big moments that happened. But for the most part, it was just a day in the life of these people. That's about it. you know, and that one was, yeah. A lot of their films are kind of like that. So I can totally understand if someone finds them a little boring. But I wanted to hear from you guys, which you clearly don't understand or don't agree with someone who's saying that, you know, Studio Ghibli films are boring.
Let's back it up. Let's back it up real quick. Indeed. Your friend, this person that apparently you still call a friend, and I have clearly made an alliance against. Okay, we are the blacks. They are clearly the greens. Okay.
Right.
So that person specifically said that Spirited Away was boring. And I take offense. That is a visual and visceral attack on my person. And so I have problems because, yes, there are boring movies in the Ghibli universe, but that one we don't speak ill about. No.
I feel like part of the magic of Studio Ghibli and so many of their works is that they unapologetically let their scenes breathe. Mm-hmm. Like there were so many moments in Nausicaa, Valley of the Wind, mm-hmm. where she's just standing on a cliff, like overlooking basically, you know, what's pictured to be the entire world, yeah. as the Om are like racing across the field. And there are so many like just lingering moments where you're allowed to like take in all of the colors and all of the animation and just all of the work that the team put into making this movie gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I really, really love that. And I think Spirited Away arguably has some of like the fewest moments like that. So I was just so shocked to hear that they found that movie boring out of all of them. Yeah, like that one might be the most action-packed one. And I like, besides like Porco Rosso, maybe like that movie, that movie was like chaos. if I'm remembering it right. But like I feel like that was like a fun thing that they did just to see if they could. But yeah, Spirited Away, of all of them, there's just something's always happening. What more could you want? I don't understand.
I honestly, I'm really confused. So I'm sitting here like, wait, there was literally always something happening. There's always something in the background. There's some lamps flying around. There's just something always happening. And I, again, like I saw Spirited Away so long ago, and I know, Kenny, we've talked about this before, but I remember what I cried on that movie. I cried as bad on that movie as I cried when I watched Thelma and Louise. It's right at the end. Right. It's all the emotion is right there at the end. The climax literally hits, and then you're like, oh my God. Like, and so there's a lot of that movie I feel like I've literally forgotten, because the most beautiful moment is when she gives Haku back his name. You know, when what's her face reminds Haku what his name is. And I just remember crying so hard at that moment, and just how, you know, beautiful and loving that whole interaction is, because it's like giving her, even her reminding him what his name is, also meant that she could never have him as her friend anymore. You know, like there was so much loss and so much gain in that one moment. And it kind of disregard everything else that's happened in the movie because I can't remember. it wiped my memory, but I'm like, I just feel like I can understand. Like, for example, my sister didn't like that movie. I remember she said she watched that in English. She didn't watch it in Japanese with the subtitles. And I remember she kept saying the little girl was annoying her. And I said, okay, no, I'll give you that, because I watched it in English too. And yeah, she could come off as quite annoying, the voice. Please give me a job. Like, yeah, okay. I can understand that. That's your only complaint about the movie. You couldn't get into it because the little girl was bothering you. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, that's fine. But I have a hard time saying that Spirited Away was boring, because I just felt like there were so many things that were going on that you just needed to catch. But like, if we're going to talk about Totoro is actually boring. You know,
I don't know. Like, that's something I want to say with potentially with stuff not hitting certain people in the same way. One of the things, I'm a big nerd for animation, because I've always wanted to be an animator. So like, the line work, I'm just gonna be enamored by that. Like, I'm just like, you can actually see, like, watching Aristocrats Aristocats from Disney is seeing the actual individual pencil strokes or whatever. I'm like, this is amazing. But beyond that, I was also like, oh, like being a father and having daughters. I'm like, okay, I can relate to a lot of the things that's happening. And I thought the story with the mother and that, like, that was like touching. And so there was things that I liked that I felt like this is a slow moving thing that will eventually ramp up. And then when the cat bus showed up, I'm like, all right, this is what we're going to do. This week.
Right.
We get into the action. Right. It's a cat bus. You can't go wrong with the cat bus.
No. And
they went wrong, apparently, because it was just like, you know what? The last moments of the film where the little girl's running around, she's crying, just destroyed me. Like, I was like, I just imagine my daughter running around, not knowing where to go.
She's
in a new place or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, but then even with it ends, I'm like, okay, looking at it as a whole, I'm like, okay, this isn't as good as I thought it was going to be because it just ends. There's no...
It just ends, yeah.
Right. And so I can understand, like, for some people that will be just boring. For me, the ending didn't justify everything else. I thought everything else was good until the ending. But I think that if you don't have a daughter or you don't have... And not to say that you can't relate, but if you don't have children, that might set you off and be like, you know what? This ain't my cup of tea. This is not what I signed up for, you know? And that being said, it is much more boring than Spirited Away. Yeah, it's very... In terms of, like, Spirited Away, though, it's way more boring than that film.
Like, yeah, it felt way more. I felt Totoro was a let just I when you and I talked about it the last time, I feel the exact same way you did. It was a letdown. It was like, okay, there was all these things happening and we thought it was going to build up to this great climax, and it didn't. It just fell short. And honestly, one of my favorite parts is the fact that she's running around with that corn and she's like and she yells and she's like, you can't have this. This is for my mom. And I'm like, that is so precious, because I was literally like tearing up watching her because she's four. Right. You know, and I loved the detail that they put into this child doing these. I thought that was amazing, but it didn't pay off. There was no payoff.
It really didn't.
And then again, I'm okay with it because it's one of the older, it's not old, but you know, it's one of the older movies. And I'm like, okay, they got better as they went along. Some of them. I mean, I guess you could, some people would be like, oh, no, this at this time. But I mean, like, I love Kiki's Delivery Service. So that was really cute. And yeah. I love my neighbor, the Yamada.
Grave of the Fireflies.
What'd you say?
Oh, Grave of the Fireflies.
Oh, I said Grave of the Fireflies. I think it's one of their oldest ones. And oh my God.
We can't talk about that here. We can't talk about that.
I'm sorry.
No, we've spoken about that long time ago. We talked about that. I don't remember when it was exactly we talked about that, Kenny. It was, we had another guest on and we talked about that, and we love that movie. That is,
it's beautiful.
So beautiful. I cried so hard on that movie.
Have you seen the Easter egg making its way around the internet about the cover of the, like, the movie, like the cover art?
No,
I haven't seen that.
So somebody dialed up the brightness on it, and I tried to find the bottom of this to figure out if this was legit or not, but it seems legit. It looks like when you dial up the brightness to like a ridiculous amount, there is a helicopter like in the sky, like behind the title. And it's hidden, so the kids are like, I think they're like laughing and playing in the front, and then you see like this looming like attack helicopter behind them.
Yeah, it has like the warp.
That was crazy.
I guess I see it though in the background. Even if you don't write it, you can actually see the silhouette of a, you know, kind of like foreshadowing what's to come type stuff. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, and
creepy all at the same time. Surprisingly, this was made, and what happens is, I think also what people get out of it is a little different based on the director, because they swap, you know, like Castle in the Sky was their first film, and then they had Grave of the Fireflies and My Neighbor within the same year, and it was two different directors. And so you potentially, how they were going about it might have been totally different, like, because they kind of go back and forth between the two directors. There's like a third and fourth that pop up here and there, but for the most part, it's just two people. And so one might be the person who directed Grave of the Fireflies wasn't the same for my neighbor, even though they did do Kiki's Delivery Service. So it's kind of like, eh, it depends. It depends on what it is. And like you said, it was older. Like, this was 1988.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, like, Howl's Moving Castle, which I think is awesome, came out in 2004.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely been some changes and some, you know, in terms of how they tell stories. But at the same time, I'm like, I get it. I get it. I'm giving you the side eye, but I get it. I totally get it. But I think the short that they did with LucasArts was great. If you haven't seen it, go to Disney Plus. Like I said, it's only 3 minutes long, and it's nice. I like it. I don't think that it'll be up there in terms of, you know, because they do the best animated shorts of the year. I don't think it's going to be up there, mainly because Pixar usually steals that, but it's still pretty great. It's still pretty great.
Ghibli.
The next thing we want to talk about, and this is a little bit of a low point, was the voice actor, Kevin Conroy, actually passed earlier this week,
yeah.
I believe, or earlier last week. And for the people who don't know, he's essentially the voice of Backman. And I say essentially not to knock the other things that he's done, but he's kind of like the Casey Kasem when you think of Shaggy.
Yeah.
Like, he's been voicing Batman for as long as I can remember. And by that, I mean, like, the Batman, the 1990, you know, Batman animated series. He was also in majority of the DC Universe animated original films as Batman. Yeah. He also did the video games. The Arkham Knight series or whatever. He even voiced Alfred. Like, he was all about Batman. Like, you know, he also had, you know, in some other animated shows, he did some voice acting there. But for the most part, he's been with, you know, DC Comics, WB, and all that. And it was, you know, sad to hear that he had passed. And this is, you know, just outside looking in, because we didn't know him personally, and we kind of go off of the things that he's done and, you know, what his, his contributions to, you know, nerd stuff that we like. And the 90s Batman show was really big for me. It was kind of like the X-Men. Like, X-Men and Batman were pretty huge when they were out. And it was one of the most well-written shows, I think. And to have, like, the iconic, like, Batman, like, you just knew, like, Batman is going to sound this way. Like, he's not, there's no other Batman. Like, yeah, we have, you know, Batman as, you know, Ben Affleck and, you know, all these other people. But when you think of Batman, I kind of think of Kevin Conroy. Like, he was even in the Lego games as Batman.
Yeah,
you know, so I don't really hear anybody else, you know, for the most part. And so, like,
unless it's what's his face from the Lego movie.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, there has been other people to voice Batman, and it's usually, you know, comedic or something along those lines, right? It's comedy. Or it's a nod back to the original, you know, the Batman where they had, you know, Robin like, gee Willikers Batman, and have the blam and the blam, you know, they have those actors, I can't remember his name, that would come up and he would actually do the voicing and whatnot. But for the most part, it's been Kevin Conroy. And so hearing, you know, about it is always like, you know, I first found out on Twitter, because obviously that's where the world gets its news. And
yes,
I was like, darn, like, that's, you know, it's a weird thing, I guess. And we're going to talk a little bit about this a little bit more when we talk about Black Panther. But it's weird to not know a person, but be kind of like enamored with their work to the point of, you know, feeling kind of sad, you know, when they pass, as if you knew the person. And I say that because, you know, you don't want to, when you make mention of these people, you don't want to make it seem like you had a close relationship, because that kind of feels wrong, considering they actually, you know, they have family and whatnot who are grieving. But and you don't want to make it all about their work, but that's kind of all we know them for, because, you know, we never got to hang out and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so I just want to make that clear, that when I say the things that I'm saying, it's not because I bully him down to just being Batman and that's all he was or ever was going to be. No, that's not what I'm saying. It's just that I didn't know of him outside of Batman. And so that's kind of where I, you know, perceive. But from all intents and purposes, the things that people are saying about him online have all been very positive. you know, whether it's friends of his or family have come out and, you know, spoken about things outside of Batman and saying that he was a good person. And so, you know, it's nice to know that he was, you know, loved and you know, cherished outside of his work. Because, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of times where we'll, you know, someone will pass and unfortunately you'll get all sorts of nasty stuff pop up about things in their past. And that wasn't the case here. It was just an mm-hmm. outpouring of love. And so I kind of wanted to make mention of that just as a fan and as a, you know, someone who, you know, who loves Batman, you know, to make mention and give, you know, kind of pay our respects, you know, praying that, you know, the family can, you know, grieve and, yeah, find some solace in the fact that he had a lot of fans all over the place who, you know, are also mourning with you in a way, in a way. Beyond that, though, what are some fond memories of you guys with Batman? I know with the 90s show, like I said, it was really well written. And as dark as it was, it wasn't overpowering to the thought, to the fact that I thought it wasn't a kid's show. Granted, there's some elements that aren't for children, like just totally aren't. but I think it was balanced well with like having a dark, brooding, you know, superhero mm-hmm. that wasn't so dark that kids couldn't watch it. Very, very awesome stuff there.
I feel like the thing that I remember the most, or the thing that stuck out outside of the fact that I did love that show and I always try to make sure to catch it, was that I remember being told that Batman was drawn on black paper when I was young. I don't know if that's true, but that's what my brother told me. And I just thought that was cool because we know that most shows are not.
Right.
Whatever. And, you know, Batman, you watch that show, that cartoon, and you know how dark it is. It's not just, okay, the story is dark. No, like everything is just dark. And I thought that was really cool. If you compare that to other stuff, other shows that we watch, other cartoons that we watch. But yeah, I loved that show. And I thought that was really sad that he had a short battle with cancer. So yeah. That's what I remember.
I mean, he means so many people's childhood. And like, just, I have to admit, I'm pretty new to his work. Batman wasn't like a big part of my childhood, but I've been watching like just reviews of like his work and his life and the legacy that he left, and just looking at like how much love he clearly poured into every single line, like especially yeah. ones where mm-hmm. it gets to like the heart of who Bruce Wayne is as a person, mm-hmm. Like his empathy that he has for a lot of the villains, even like to the bitter end, like you can hear that in every line that was delivered. And I just have immense respect for his work and what he left behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's tough. I mean, considering how, you know, because the joke is right. Like Batman is unfeeling, this cold person who, you know, is all about justice and to the point of like not wanting, not really being a father to his son and all this other stuff. But then with, you know, Kevin doing the voice work, it's like, oh, there's other facets of this character that you see or not see rather, but hear in his voice, how he kind of lets his guard down at times, or how he's actually encouraging, even though it doesn't sound like it. Like there's things that he does with his voice that, you know, for someone who has more range, I guess, with a character is a little bit easier. Like with Superman, he's just jolly for the most part. And he'll have, you know, moments where he's angry or sad or whatever the case may be. And obviously his voice is going to reflect that. But with Batman, because he's as opposed to being like Bruce Wayne, right? Like as Batman, he has to be, what, stoic, I guess? Like, he has to be, he's got to be tough all the time. Like, uh-huh. he can't let his guard down mm-hmm. or, you know, all hell will break loose. And so when he's talking to people, when he's talking to villains, you know, and all this other stuff, it's like, I have to be, you know, kind of like the Batman in, you know, the Batman Begins series and whatnot, where he's talking and, like, it sounds like he has something in his throat. Like he's like, rah, like he's like growling at people or whatever. It's like, cause that's the joke. Like Batman has to be, he has to sound more menacing. Even when Ben Affleck played him, he has to sound more menacing than he is to scare, you know, villains. And so to have Kevin be able to do that and still show a more humanistic side of this character, that's really tough. And yeah. that's, you know,
yeah.
it's probably him based on like how talented he was playing this character for so long.
Definitely. You know,
it's pretty freaking awesome. So yeah. Again, shout out to, you know, the fans and family. You know, it's tough. It's definitely tough. Moving on to our next topic, which would be the Black Panther. We're not going to talk about Wakanda Forever in depth because, you know, Tess hasn't seen it yet. She can't see it right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll have to wait till that, you know, comes out on Disney Plus or whatever. But we can talk about how we felt. So there's not going to be any spoilers. You don't got to skip nothing or anything like that. But this does tie into what I was talking about in terms of Kevin, where like you don't necessarily know someone, but you feel a way or you feel an emotional attachment to them based on their work and, you know, some of the positive things that they've done or that you've heard about. And that's kind of what this was going into this film. Mm-hmm. And it hits you real quick. Like it's sad up front. I knew it was coming. Like you kind of knew what was going to happen. Like you just had to, you know, based on the trailers, based on what people have been saying about the film. And I wasn't prepared. I really wasn't. And there's a lot of that in this film right from the beginning where you have to deal with whatever grief you have. And the characters, the actors on screen are doing the same, where they are on one instance or one hand grieving for a character in a film, you know, in a comic book character, but on the other hand, actually grieving for a friend. And it comes out in their performances. This was one of the first times that they do this really cool thing, right? They have, you know, they do the Marvel sign at the beginning of a film of, you know, these MCU films, and they'll have all the superheroes flying about, and it's this, you know, triumphant music or whatever that's playing. It was silence. It was silence. And it just had, you know, Chadwick Boseman, you know, all his different roles or whatever playing in the background, and it was quiet, and the entire theater was quiet. There was children there. The entire theater was quiet. I have never experienced that in a theater for a Marvel film. And not just once, this happened twice, where something happened and I guess the film kind of called for silence and everyone was silent. And that kind of, you know, kind of helps to paint the picture of what I'm trying to get across when it comes to my emotions at the time. I was floored by some of the things that was shown and what was being said, just with dealing with grief in my own life and how that can manifest in negative ways and, you know, whether or not you are, how do I say this? You know, whether something is your fault or not, you know, kind of like blaming yourself. There's also issues when it comes to how people grieve and how people, like in terms of generational grieving and how certain people see, I'm trying to say things without spoiling things, but there's parts where, there's parts, because it's flashing in my head and I'm like, oh, I want to say that. Like I can't say that. There's parts where like, a character is grieving and another character has already gone through that cycle because they're older and they're trying to instill some wisdom. But because the person is still grieving, it comes off as almost like empty platitudes at times. And other times it comes off as maybe them being naive, like the older person being naive, like what is really here? What is really happening? And I should be allowed to feel the way I feel. And where the older person is like, yeah, I get that, but you're going to destroy yourself. You're going to grieve yourself into a grave. And that's not something I want for you. And so there's this friction between these characters based on that, that is really interesting and really, really human, I think. And that's not something I thought I would be saying about an MCU film. Like, not to say that there hasn't been good performances and there hasn't been moving moments, right, in these films, but because of the backdrop, because of what, you know, the real world happenings surrounding this film, is like, oh, this hits a lot harder than I thought it would. Like there was moments where I looked around, I'm like, Angela Bassett's not gonna make me cry. She ain't doing it. Nope. Nope, she is not gonna do
It really felt like, it really felt like with this movie, Ryan Coogler was like, I mean, they like came out the gate with, we are not moving on, like nothing happened. Like, we are going to not only acknowledge what happened, but we're gonna process this and we're gonna like sink into the understanding that there is no wrong way to process this. And that was really, really amazing that they were able to do that without like explicitly saying that. Like, they did it so poetically. It was amazing.
That's good to hear. And I haven't, obviously I haven't seen it, but I agree with what you just said, Brittany, because I feel this is just my own personal opinion. I don't really know, but I feel like as somebody, as most people did not know that Chad was sick. And so if you've got a group of people who are working on something, and it's fairly hard to process when you don't know that somebody is ill and then they pass away. And the only there is no right way to process your grief. And if this is the best way that the director was able to do that, then I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it's because we I think, because there's groups of people who are like, that are saying that they should recast T'Challa, and some of what they're saying makes sense, and I get it, but in terms of potentially steering a film themselves, based on whether or not they'll go see the film and stuff like that. And the idea that Disney is potentially profiting off of, him passing, I'm like, you're missing a point that these people were friends. Like, I read a interview with Ryan and a few other cast members talking about how they were stunned to find out what had happened, but then also were just in disbelief. Like, was it Lalita? I think that's how you say her name.
Leticia.
Letitia was like, she got a text saying that, my condolences. And she was like, what do you mean? Like, what are you talking about? My condolences. And then, she found out, like everybody else did, kind of. And she went and called. She was calling his phone. And he
Yeah, because
was
she didn't believe
calling,
it.
exactly. And was calling. She talked to Ryan. It was like, she's like, tell me the truth. This is a joke, right? And so what I'm saying is, I'm not going to, obviously go over the whole interview, but what I'm saying is that it wasn't just like a coworker to them. It wasn't a, we meet for this film and then we go about our way and we never talk and we never whatever. She made a point to say that he was like an older brother. And so how do you, those people who are saying the things that they're saying, it's like, how do you say that to someone who's like, okay, we started this, we want to finish it in their honor even. And but we don't want to just we don't want another actor here. We don't want another we don't want to just pretend like nothing happened because we're actually going through it while shooting. Like we are having a real moment while shooting this film. We can't pretend that this didn't happen. I mean, I know that's our, part of their job is to pretend, but I'm saying they can't pretend like this didn't happen, as if he didn't mean something to them, as if, they could just, especially Ryan. And so they're like, what we want to do is we want to honor Chadwick. We want to, set up the things that we want to set up in the MCU that we were already going to set up, but we want to do it in a tasteful way and in a manner that would allow, eventually allow for things to move forward in this regard. And I thought they did a brilliant job with that. I think that they were able to give kind of a, I don't want to say they were able to grieve, we were able to grieve with them, and they were able to still make or produce a decent film. And that's not something that's easy to do, especially with all the chaos that was happening surrounding the film with, the actress, falling off the motorcycle and getting injured and,
Who
them
got
having
hurt?
Letitia, she actually, when she was doing a stunt, and there was like they had a motorcycle that was, I guess it was rigged so that there was a camera on the side of it, and I think the camera itself clipped like a pole or something, and so it flipped the bike, and so she was out for
High-sided.
weeks.
Ooh, I didn't hear about that.
I didn't either.
Yeah, so and this was, I want to say, after his passing, and so there was already, difficulties there, but then. But then that, and then, she had to go to the hospital and all this other stuff. They had to stop production. So Ryan would, end up shooting scenes that didn't involve her or whatever. But, you know, you've seen the film. She's all over the film. So that was kind of hard as well. So there's all these other things that are happening. And it's like the last thing they want is people to go and like boycott the film, like over, because they want a superhero to, you know, to see a certain superhero. I understand, you know, the idea that you don't want a company making money off of, you know, someone passing, but I think it was less that and more so of them wanting to honor, you know, a friend that passed. And like I said, I think they did a great job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on a show when it came to like Namor and, you know, being a you know, villain, non-villain, and all the, you know, special effects. Mm-hmm. It was better than the previous film in terms of CGI. And the costumes were great. Like, yo, the costumes, yeah, though. Like, I was like, yo, can I give me one of those? Like, that looks fly. Like, hold up. Like, that was dope. But yeah, I was a big fan of the movie. It's now at the top of my MCU list.
Oh, good.
And granted, that's a little, you know, it's also off the strength of the previous film. It's off the strength of a lot of things that happened. But, you know, not many of the films have given me a strong emotional response. Outside of like, oh, some cool shit happened. You know, like this was like, no, I actually feel something while watching. And that's pretty good. That's good. But how did you feel, Brittany?
I mean, well, I don't know what I could cover that you didn't just cover the whole time you were talking. I was like, yes, I completely forgot I was supposed to be contributing here. Just so you know. I mean, there's so much more I want to talk about that's going to be like spoilery, but there was so much like juxtaposition between like so many different elements. I mean, this was hinted at in the first movie. Was Shuri's relationship with science and also her culture. So science is like super important to her, but also she has grown up in this culture that is extremely steeped in all things spirituality and respect for the ancestors and, you know, just the importance of physical health and spiritual health and all of that. And we really get to see her struggle with that in this movie, which I thought was really incredible. I really, really like that we get to see that side of her. Because in the first one, she felt a lot more childlike, right, and a lot more like happy-go-lucky and just kind of, you know, I want to say head in the clouds, but also like extremely like responsible and all of that. And then right, in this one, she's a lot more conflicted between so many different things and so many different things pulling her in so many different directions. So I really, really like that we got to see another dimension of her. That might've been my favorite thing about this movie.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you again, not seeing it, but I know that Shuri has a huge role and that made me happy because I felt the same way you just felt. I'm like, oh, Letitia looks so grown. This is how I feel when I see the previews. I'm like, oh, look at the little girl.
No, she did amazing. And like just taking on the reins of basically being the main protagonist in this and mm-hmm. doing a really, really good job. And also shout out to like everyone did a great job. Shout out to Dominique Thorne for playing Riri, because I need Riri to be back as soon as freaking possible. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the show coming to Disney Plus. I think the actress did a really great job. And what's dope about her portrayal was that it felt like what I've been reading of this character for however many years. Like mm-hmm. her mannerisms, how she talked, you know, it was like I feel like I've read those words that you're saying right now. Like this is freaking great. And because usually it's, you know, you get what you can, you know, not everybody can be, you know, what's his name? Professor X or whatever, like where he looks immediately like, you know, the professor, but he sounds like him. You know what I mean? Like you're not going to get a perfect person for the role every time. Right. But like, I think she is perfect for mm-hmm. Riri. And I think they did a good job of introducing her. The film is kind of packed. And I already said on Twitter, like, I don't even care, like flaws and all. I still had a great time watching, and it's just despite some of the things, because, you know, they had to fit in so much. And that's unfortunately what's been going on with Marvel, where it's like, we have to set up the next film, so everything is a setup. And because of that, you kind of lose, you don't have enough time to really branch out or to explore other realms that, like, you would like to.
That but being that's said, such a flaw.
It is, unfortunately, because I would rather them do the setup where it was just after the credits. Like hey,
they used to do, you mean?
Right, like they used to do, and just have it be a one-off. Like, this is, you know, this is all their world. This is Wakanda. And then later on, after the credits, we see, oh, this was, you know, this was the real villain, or this was the whatever. Like, until you get your ensemble, you know, films, because there are some things that I think we're really hitting on something really great, and then we kind of just like, and we have to move on now. And it makes sense. It makes sense, because you don't have 5 hours of film right here. You have to actually keep it moving. And so, but mm-hmm. even the short time that Dominique Thorne is on screen, she does a great job. Like, she does a really, really good job. Angela Bassett, I think, did a really, really great job. And, like, duh. But she, there was a scene that she did, and I'm not going to spoil it for you guys, but there's a scene that she did where she's, you know, lamenting the fact that, you know, her family members are gone. And she's yelling at someone.
Oh, and I was like, that one.
I was like, whoa. That was another moment where the theater went black or went silent, because some people felt like, I guess in the theater, because I heard people talking, felt like she was being a little harsh. But then when she said what she said, after they listened to her a little bit more, they were like, ooh. And they kind of, like, everyone got quiet. And she just commanded, and she wasn't even there. We're watching a film, right? But she commanded the room. she commanded the room.
Give the woman her Oscar, for crying out loud.
Like, I was like, wow, that is dope. Forgetting that she's been in a lot of films and, you know, she's amazing at what she does. But, you know, you don't, and even she, I think she said it too, like, you don't necessarily get that opportunity in a Marvel film. This is about superheroes. Mm-hmm. And so being able to actually turn that part on, you know, the acting and turn it up a notch, you know, was really rewarding. And it resonated with the fans, or at least with the theater I was in, because people was quiet. It was like, I got to hear what she got to say. You see Auntie over there? She is talking. Let her talk. Hey, let her Auntie. Talk.
I'm still mad at him for that.
You know that was ad-libbed, right?
Yes, totally. Everybody was like, wait, what?
Wait, it was?
Yeah, totes.
Yeah, when he said,
oh,
hey,
that
Auntie.
Was my favorite.
That yep. was great.
And they looked at
I don't know how everybody on that set kept it professional, because I would have been.
They were confused. They were confused. They were like, that camera caught them. You know, when they turn their heads, it's like, what? They're like, wait, what? It's just so good.
Solid. So yeah,
the second movie has quotable one-liners in it too. There's one in particular. You probably know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
That's just been saying all day.
Yes.
My husband's so sick of me.
Yes. So what we'll do right now, and this is, you know, future, we will have a spoiler cast just talking about Black Panther. And Brittany, you're more than welcome to come back and
yes,
chat
please.
With us. But you know, as soon as it hits Disney Plus and Tess, you're able to, you know, slowly look over it, I definitely want to come back and just say all the things that we can't say. Because I was tongue tied for a second, because I was close to spoiling something, and I was like, ooh, let me not do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
I want to do, you know how we did like Insecure. That's how I want to do. I want to break some stuff down. There's some things I want to talk about. But that will be in a future cast. If you're listening on everything that you're listening on, please remember to follow, subscribe, hit the notification bell if you're listening on YouTube. Shout out to Brittany for hanging out with us. We had such a great time talking with you today. And like I said, you are welcome to stop back by whenever. I am enamored at some of the things that you've done. And you said your new book drops. When does your new book drop? You said March?
March 7th, yeah.
All right, I will. Okay. Got to put that in my calendar.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for having me on. This has been amazing.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime.
Yes. And we're
low key. So, you know, just come on by. Just be like, "Hey, you guys busy?" And we'll be like, "Absolutely not." So just come on.
Yes. Also, folks, if you're listening on, you know, iTunes and all that, add us to your RSS feed. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at the Gamecast One. Definitely put the one there because someone else has the Gamecast, unfortunately. I don't even think they're using it. I feel away.
We should call them.
There's so many dope names. They're just sitting there with like zero followers, zero mentions, just there, like just in case they need it one day. And I'm like, I could use that. You know,
well, do you need me to like suck up to Elon and then maybe get him to like give it to us or something?
Bam, no. That's okay. Mm-mm, that is all right.
That would never happen.
Right? That is okay. Good night. But yes, make sure you follow because we have more special guests. We have more things happening before the year is out. This has been a dope year for us. We've had some big guests too, you know, besides Brittany, who's awesome a guest. We also had David F. Sandberg on. We also had director Scott Derrickson, who directed Doctor Strange, which for us is one of our favorite MCU movies.
Yeah.
And we have some future guests as well. Like I said, subscribe, follow, retweet, do all that good stuff. And yeah, that's it for housekeeping.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is the part where I tell you guys to do the same thing as I tell you every week. So just remember to wash your faces, wash your hands, and your butts, because y'all don't be doing that. Y'all don't wash your legs either. So come on, man. Like, for real.
Bam.
Let's get it. Get into it. But just remember to wear your masks, please, still in public places. I mean, you know, just do it if you want or whatever. I mean, I still do it, so whatever. But get your vaccines if you feel like you should. I mean, I got them.
Me too. So
yeah. But yeah, exactly. See. But so do all those things so that we can.
I mean, I'm doing daycare drop offs. I'm going into a germ war zone every morning.
Right?
Oh gosh.
Kids are nasty.
Even without a pandemonium, it would still be crazy.
Right. Evan, and we're gonna get a parallelogram every year now because of kids.
Right.
So, anyway, do all those things. And just remember, guys, don't be a dick. Be kind. # Don't be an Elon. In a world of Elons, be a Keanu. Okay?
Yes, be Keanu.
That's all I got to say. So I need off. Brittany, you got anything for us? Any final words of these?
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, I mean, you said it. Wear your mask. Don't be Elon Musk. All that good stuff.
All right, everyone. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.